Welcome to Medical Confessions,
your remedy for serious medicine. I'm Jen.
I'm April.
And I'm Scott. Today we're going to be talking about sleep deprivation, and all the health effects of not getting good sleep. Do you ever wonder why people who don't get enough good sleep are more prone to Alzheimer's and heart attacks and strokes and diabetes and mental health problems? Mm. All revolves around good sleep. So if you don't want to be fat and have lots of heart attacks and, you know, memory problems, get good sleep. How's that for a teaser?
That was like he's probably been memorizing that.
Unloaded your bag, right?
Yeah. Like, just vomited on our table just now.
Yes, we apologize for the sound issues we've had, but we're fixing them slowly but surely. And you don't know, but our microphone is hanging from the ceiling right now.
The sad thing is, it's not like we bought a new microphone. We literally took our desk microphone and we're hanging it from the ceiling. And I'm not kidding, it is bungee cords and scotch tape.
But it works.
So, yes. All right. So, sleep deprivation.
Sleep deprivation. It's bad news.
What is it?
What is sleep deprivation?
Yeah.
Not getting enough sleep. Done.
Done.
Exit over.
Well, but that's not necessarily time spent in bed or people's, you know, working on it, because sleep deprivation can happen for a number of reasons.
Yeah. So, I mean, good sleep is important. Everybody knows this. It's kind of out there, you know, all over the news that you got to get good sleep or bad things can happen. It seems like every other day there's a new study proving that you need to get 7 to 8 hours of sleep. The funny thing is, no one really knows why sleep is necessary specifically. No one has ever been able to prove what it's actually doing for you on an individual level. There was a funny researcher, Alan Hobson, who his famous quote was, "The only known function of sleep is to cure sleepiness." But we also know that if you don't get good sleep, you will die. Every animal study done on total sleep deprivation, 100% of mice and rats will die within 2 to 3 weeks if you don't let them sleep.
But how do you not? I mean, I feel like at a certain point, like especially in humans, eventually your body would just be like, no.
So funny story with the mice, what they do is they stick them on these turning...
This is not a funny story.
Every time we do an episode, I feel like there's animal cruelty. Like, we are supporting animal cruelty.
Oh, this is total animal cruelty. They stick them on, you know, in these large...
Dampen down your enthusiasm.
Yeah, it's like kind of sick how you got excited about that.
I actually saw a video on this, and I'm like, I felt really bad for the mice, but they put them on these turntables in the middle of big tubs of water, going just fast enough that they have to hold on to gain traction. If they don't, if they fall off into the water, and they have to get back up. And they just keep doing that until they basically die. And 100% of them die within 2 to 3 weeks.
Hmm. And do they feed them or anything at all? Like, how do they give them breaks enough to eat and stuff? Because I'm thinking, is it just a sleep deprivation, or is there also like malnourishment, dehydration?
Well, we'll get into some of the like...
We're talking about the mice. When they're on the spin table.
Yeah, like, do they get a break from it?
Do they at least get to eat?
Yeah, because I'm like, how do you make that study valid if they're not getting fed?
Yeah, or they just dizzy as hell.
They have spin ear table. Crystals. They just will themselves to die.
I didn't perform the study myself, and in the video that I watched, it didn't actually show them feeding stuff, but I would imagine you have to eat, otherwise, you know.
Yeah, because I always wonder, like, when we look at these studies, I want to know the intricacies of, like, how they performed it. Like, did they give them, like, a 5-minute break every few hours?
Yeah. Well, Were they vomiting? Because that's like being stuck on a merry-go-round. That would be awful.
Well, the methods section of any study is usually the longest one, where they're explaining exactly how they did it and all that sort of stuff. So,
but that didn't entertain you as much as the video of watching these poor mice
spend
to their demise.
Yeah, you say I felt bad, like you're a presidential candidate and you just won. You're like, I really feel bad that you lost.
Yeah. Anyways. Well,
what I do know is I've been sleep deprived and it sucks. So that must really suck for those poor
mice. What's the longest that you've gone without sleep, do you think?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't really... I know for a fact 36 hours several times.
Yeah. And I would say that I probably the same, that 36 to 48 hour window, just because of work and then personal life and all that, and just going. Mm-hmm. And you feel drunk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, so funny story, we'll get into the specifics of why, but if you go 17 to 19 hours without sleep, your muscle coordination is the same as blowing a 0.05 for blood alcohol content. Hmm. So lack of sleep, will cause problems driving. For obvious reasons, knowing that all the animals die, there's never really been a study on when humans will die from a lack of sleep, but there's tons of anecdotal evidence. In 2012, there was a 26-year-old Chinese guy who tried to stay awake to watch all of the matches of the European Championship. He made it to about 11 days before he promptly died.
European Championship of what?
Soccer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just wanted to watch all the soccer
matches. How important was it? Was it chess? Okay, soccer, I can't understand. Okay, go ahead.
But not chess?
But not chess.
The ER doc, his statement was, the gentleman was in good health, but staying up through the night and not sleeping weakened his immune system, and he drank and smoked while watching the football, triggering his condition. And the condition he's talking about is death.
I'm just wondering how he managed to not fall asleep. Like, I would just think at some point your body would just give up and you go to sleep.
Well, and 11 days is a funny one. The guy who holds the record for the longest amount of time staying awake is Randy Gardner. He made it 264 hours or 11 days. He did that in 1965. Lots of people have stayed awake longer, most likely, but the Guinness Book of World Records stopped tracking the feet because of all the health problems that come with a lack of sleep. Mm-hmm. So they won't even track it anymore.
Huh. Well, and then I wonder, like, what constitutes actually getting good sleep? So if somebody's going a long period of time, could they in fact go 18 days as long as they got like 2 hour naps? At what point now are you going to sustain your life a little bit? Like, is there an amount that would, you know, allow your body enough rest to keep going, but like a minimal amount?
That's a good question. I think that would be a active study for some research. I know those Navy SEAL docs, they have to give them X number of sleep, and I think it's somewhere in that 45 to minutes to an hour range, like every 36 hours. Don't quote me on the numbers, but there's a specific amount they have to give them for health purposes.
Yeah,
And I don't know.
Microsleeps.
Yeah, and I'm not sure where they're getting their information from and what studies they're quoting, but I know that they are required to give them a certain amount.
And isn't it kind of very individual? Like, I think about like what some people are like, even in my own kids. One can do well with very little sleep, and the other's a train wreck. So would it be the same for each one of these people? Like,
well, I think everybody's body's a little bit different in how it manages their own homeostasis and their medical conditions at the time. But so everybody's a little bit different. But what every study says is somewhere between 7 and 8 hours of sleep a night is what you need to get the most optimal health, if you can term it that way.
Apparently it only takes 1 hour to affect cardiovascular systems. There was a study done, daylight savings time in the spring, 25% increase in heart attacks. And in the fall, when you gain an hour, there was a 21% decrease.
I hate daylight
savings. I know.
Time.
Just get rid of it.
It's annoying.
Yeah. Arizona's got it right.
Somebody else just recently.
Oregon, I think, is pretty close. I know we're pretty close here in Washington. Lots of states are trying to go away from it, I think.
Get rid of it.
That's just a huge jump.
It's kind of scary because I think about as Americans, like how little value we put on good rest. I mean, how many go to bed with their cell phones or how many stay up in Netflix, you know, until they really can't stay awake anymore, and how much time we put into eating well or trying to and going to the gym. Yeah, there's not a lot of emphasis on that. But if a number like that is, you know, valued around a 1 hour sleep difference, like why do we not take better sleep more seriously?
A lot of the studies I'm going to mention here soon would talk about 6 hours of sleep a night versus 7 to 8. And there is huge differences in just that 1 hour.
Which really sucks because I'm lucky if I sleep 6 hours at night.
Do you do your sleep app and did it tell you your average?
Well, I did not do it when you guys did it this round. I've done it in the past. And it was actually, like, I think I told this to April, disenchanting from, like, I was so annoyed by how bad my sleep was. And I didn't have these really wonderful chunks of sleep. I was up constantly and I didn't want to listen to myself and my mumblings and snoring. That was really annoying too. But I clearly do not get good sleep. And when I try to sleep, even at home, under good conditions, I still get less than 6 hours almost every night.
A sleep study, like a legitimate one.
I don't want a CPAP.
Ignorance is bliss. You think it's that?
Well, I told you, like, my dentist a while back was just like, holy small, you know, airway, like, you are the worst, like, possible candidate for good sleep. And then I went in and met with the doc about the sleep, and they were, like, telling me, basically, there's nothing that is going to be done once they diagnose it other than put you on a CPAP.
So how much money have you spent on essential oils over the last year for better health?
Those are used for everything, though. It's not the machine that scares me or anything like that. It's just, like, I just know that I have a hard enough time forcing myself to put my mouth guard in at night so I don't grind my teeth. Like, I probably will not use a CPAP. I'm just pretty sure on that. Anyways, this isn't about me, Scott.
You know the fix, but hold on. You don't want to be like a 90-year-old man in bed with a CPAP machine, looking like Snuffleupagus.
I don't know that it's just a CPAP or if I'm just a light sleeper.
You know what will tell you for sure? Sleep study.
Bringing him back to sleep. Humans are actually the only mammals that delay sleep.
Like, choose not to sleep.
Yeah, when they're tired.
And 2 years old.
It's because we have Netflix and we can talk. Like, a bear is probably like...
But could you imagine, though, if we actually slept when we were tired? I'd be sleeping right now.
I don't have a problem going to sleep. Like, I'll get in bed and I am instantly tired. Like, so that's not an issue for me. So I don't feel like I delay it. I try.
We do it all the time. What it's saying is, like cats sleep 2/3 of their life.
Oh, like you're talking about throughout
humans, yeah. Okay. Like, are the only ones that
you're tired, resist, so you don't sleep.
I'm just going to power through. I'm going to delay sleep.
I agree with that because I come home from work exhausted all the time and I refuse to nap.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so the mantra of our show, right? Everything in moderation. Never so true with this particular topic. Your body, everybody knows, is trying to keep everything in it within a specific range. We call that homeostasis, pH, electrolytes, all of it. If anything gets too far out of range, your body has to adjust for that by releasing different things to try and bring it back into its range. So that the brain region, I guess, that is responsible for keeping things in homeostasis with hormones... is your hypothalamus. Your hypothalamus controls just about everything, from temperature to hunger, thirst, fatigue, emotions, growth, salt and water balance, weight, appetite, and the circadian rhythms that come with sleep. One factor that kind of is making you sleepy throughout the day is adenosine. It's a purine nucleoside, and what that does is it inhibits different neurotransmitters from your sympathetic or fight or flight nervous system, specifically norepinephrine and serotonin. It also inhibits acetylcholine, which is the neurotransmitter your body uses to kind of activate its muscles. So you go without sleep, you got poor muscle control, thus why going 17 to 19 hours is like 0.05 of your BAC, because this adenosine is inhibiting this acetylcholine. Throughout the day, adenosine is going to increase within your body, and then it peaks at nighttime, and then during the night, body kind of reabsorbs it or breaks it down. More specifically, the other way your body regulates sleep is with light and dark cycles. So dark will actually stimulate your hypothalamus to have your pineal gland secrete melatonin. Melatonin makes you feel sleepy. So if you have a lot of light, you're not going to be able to release the melatonin. Artificial light does the same thing. So if you're staying awake, reading your iPhone or whatever, or watching Netflix, it's going to keep you awake because not as much melatonin's getting secreted. And actually, cortisol gets secreted. So light will then stimulate cortisol, which is a stimulant hormone. Too much cortisol can cause lots of bad health problems. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But that's kind of how the hypothalamus is controlling or helping control sleep with hormones. So you can see if you get the hypothalamus out of whack with sleep cycles, all of these other things in the body get affected, from thirst to salt water balance, temperature, weight, appetite. So you want to talk specifics, or is that too much science for one period of time?
Sure. You're putting us to sleep.
It's working.
I'm going to start calling Scott every night.
Just talk to me. I don't care what you're saying. It makes me sleep.
Keep it clean.
Talk science.
Yes. Nighty night. Shh.
Well, funny thing story about sleep cycles and these circadian rhythms is the rhythm that your hypothalamus is using to secrete this stuff. These cycles and these rhythms are different for different age groups. So young kids tend to sleep more in the early evenings. Older adults tend to go to bed earlier, wake up earlier. Teenagers actually don't get melatonin released until later at night, so they tend to stay up later. Newborns actually don't have the cortisol circadian rhythm till about 2 to 9 weeks. And everybody knows newborns, they don't sleep well. They're up all night. So until they get that circadian rhythm in sync, they won't sleep through the night. So some of the problems that you can have, let's start with cardiovascular. You talked about the chance of heart attacks. If you get 6 hours of sleep a night compared to 8 hours of sleep a night, you've got a 48% greater chance of developing or dying of heart disease. Ugh. Sleep deprivation, all of the studies are known to give you an increased chance of high blood pressure, atherosclerosis, which is the plaque in your arteries, heart failure, and heart attacks. So bad sleep habits. Obviously, you've got all of these cardiovascular problems.
I did read that the WHO International has now classified shift work as a probable carcinogen.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Because of the disruption of the sleep-wake rhythms. That was super interesting to me.
Well, when we get to the cancer portions, 6 hours of sleep a night increase your risk of every type of known cancer. So we talked about cardiovascular. Let's talk about weight. 6 hours a night compared to 7 to 8 increases your chance of being overweight, anecdotally. Or if you get just one night of interrupted sleep, your body starts secreting more of a hormone called ghrelin. Ghrelin makes you hungry, and it actually decreases the amount of leptin that gets released, which leptin is the one that makes you feel full. So you're feeling more hungry, and you tend to eat more if you get less sleep. You also tend to crave high-calorie, high-carb foods, and because of that, you start eating all of those extra sugars. You have an increased chance of type 2 diabetes. So yeah, it's bad news for weight as well. Control. You do need your sleep
Not good for cardiovascular disease.
Dr. Matthew Walker, he's a sleep expert and neuroscientist who said pot will help you go to sleep, but it and alcohol will inhibit the REM sleep. So
the next thing I'm about to talk about is mental health, and guess who I'm going to quote?
Dr.
Matthew Walker.
Oh, how funny.
And all of his studies.
He's awesome. He's super intelligent.
I don't know the guy.
Not personally. I ran into him on the street, but no, not really.
Oh, I was like, what?
I was going to say, seriously?
Joe Rogan had him on his
show.
Okay. So I listened to his, and he was, I mean, we've done this episode before, and it was crappy quality. We had to redo it, or was this one we lost?
This is one that was crappy quality.
Okay, so
many of them that we waste that we don't even, was that the bad one, or did I look fat? Okay, that's why we got, carry on.
That one scared me then, like, to get good sleep, but he was like, oh, God, like, I'm doing this to myself. Listening to him speak about it, I'm like, geez.
Doomed.
Yeah. It's like the one thing I can control that I'm just horrible
at. Well, but we can't, actually. If you think about it, just being shift workers and the way that our careers force us to be woken up several times in a 24-hour period, we can't control it. And correct me if I'm wrong, but even just random damage like we have to our sleep cycles is horrible for you.
Absolutely horrible.
Awesome.
All right, so back to the problems with sleep deprivation. So actually, Matthew Walker and another doc, Roberts Stickhold, did a bunch of studies on sleep deprivation. And one of them in 2006, they were able to show that sleep deprivation will increase your memory for negative events and decrease your memory for positive events. And it won't allow you to put emotional experiences into context. So everybody knows you get super tired. You get, like, you know, the tired giggles, or you're crying for no reason or laughing for no reason or whatever it is. And so because of all of this stuff, you chronic sleep deprivation.
I don't know why people's laughing right now.
You're more prone to depression.
You didn't sleep last night, did you?
No, I slept fine. It's just my mom gets the giggles when she's tired.
Oh.
But it's like giggles to the point of crying.
Tears. Oh.
It's kind of funny to watch. Like, oh, mom's tired.
Yeah. My kid gets like that.
It's
your mom.
Super cute.
Funny.
So along with brain or mental health, we'll talk about brain health. There was a cool study done in 2015 talking about Alzheimer's, but there was a doc who was able to show that your neurons in your brain actually shrink when you're sleeping, and it increases the amount of cerebral spinal fluid that can it can flow better, basically, inside your brain, and so you can get rid of things. She was able to show that you can get rid of twice as many beta amyloids while sleeping than you can when you're awake. Beta amyloids are the plaques that are involved with Alzheimer's. So, not surprisingly, poor sleep habits do give you an increased chance of Alzheimer's. And this is probably the reason why. You know, when it comes to brain health, mental health, diabetes, weight, heart attacks, strokes, pretty much every disease process known to man, cancers, poor sleep habits will increase your risk of them. So get good sleep. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
way,
I mean,
way to carry go for
on.
Our jobs.
Just carry on. Tell me more, please.
Freaks me out. And it, that app, like we said, the sleep cycle app.
Mm-hmm.
Totally messes with my brain. Well, I look at it every morning. I'm like, how did I sleep? Shit.
Yeah, no, yeah. I do the same thing, and I purposefully don't turn it on at work anymore.
So that's why I used it for a time period, and I got the same results, and I was really, and work was definitely really frustrating. And so, yeah, I didn't even want to know.
I track it at home now because I want to know how I'm doing at home because I can control that, but at work, just don't. I don't even want to know.
Yeah.
Mine's very random. Like, sometimes at work it's okay, but then at home, kids, animals, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, I don't feel like my sleep at home is much better.
Doesn't sound like you're in your big, deep sleeps.
I don't dream. Yeah. Like, once in a blue moon, I will remember kind of part of a dream. But, you know, my husband or someone like April will tell me these really vivid dreams. And I'm like, I don't even remember the last time that happened to me.
You totally need a sleep study.
I know.
Did you know 12% of people dream exclusively in black and white?
Wow.
How
Isn't that crazy?
How do they determine that?
I don't know.
They just remember it being black and white?
Well, there was a study done, and people report only dreaming in black and white. I dream in color, for sure, so I'm not in that 12%. And same with blind people. Don't so much dreams like we see dreams. They dream more emotion, senses, and...
Weird. Yeah, that's interesting.
Sounds.
I would like to hear some, testimony, I guess, if you want to call it that, from deaf and blind people to see how they dream.
What are their dreams like?
Yeah, I think you would.
How do you think Helen Keller dreamed?
I don't know.
Is that too far?
No, I mean, it's legit. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is. Like, I don't mean that in a bad thing, but, like, that is
Yeah, you kind of did, though. You were like, oh, this will be funny.
Because there's so many, like, Helen Keller jokes that I was expecting him to go. I actually cringed a bit, because I'm like, here we go.
Yeah.
Animal cruelty, and now he's taking on Helen Keller. So I kind of went the opposite, you know, like out of like my negativity and frustration with this topic. The number that I found, and it was a study that was done at the Arizona State University, they found that the lowest mortality and morbidity is around 7 hours. That 7 to 9 is pretty typical, but they found that 7 close to that was like the magic number. But they actually were looking at the health impact of oversleeping, because I don't know how many people actually oversleep or have the ability to, but the habits that come with that is almost not as good as well. So cognitive impairment, depression, increased inflammation, increased pain, impaired fertility, higher risk of obesity, diabetes, higher risk of heart disease, stroke, and higher all-cause mortality. But it seems like there is kind of actually a little narrow window, and it seems like consistency is just as important as the amount of time. But like, you know, the 7 good sleep habits or whatever talk about going to bed at the same time every night, having a routine just like you do with your kids, staying asleep for the same amount of time so your body gets used to, you know, whatever different patterns it has and everything. So it was really frustrating for me because I was like, okay, so you can sleep too little, but you can also sleep too much, but it needs to be consistent. So one thing that we can't control. And I thought about not just shift workers, but what about parents? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's one thing that's very inconsistent for us too. You know, if your kid gonna have a good night tonight, it doesn't have to be a bad or a poorly sleeping child. It's just, you know, sickness, or they have their own, you know, sleep issues or whatever. And so you think about all the reasons that people don't get good sleep, bad neighbors, they live in the city that's too, like all these things that count against you. Like, how do you fix that?
Yeah, it's going to be individual. But I think what I just heard from you is that our mantra of everything in moderation comes true again, because
right.
You need just enough, but not too much. And you do, all of these hormone releases by the hypothalamus are based on circadian rhythms. So if you get that rhythm out of whack, it's going to be out of whack, and then you're screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no hope for us getting any sort of rhythm.
Right. Well, and I feel like this is one of the more difficult, you know, a lot of the episodes we do when we talk about diabetes or we talk, you know, whatever we talk about kind of taking control and moderating and stuff, this seems like one of the more difficult things. This is almost kind of like on par with dieting, or, you know, like mm-hmm. this is a really hard one. Actually, I feel like I have better luck with dieting. Like, you could probably take more control of that, but sleep seems like the very elusive one of all the things that we've done.
There was a poll done in 2011 by the National Sleep Foundation, found that 43% of Americans age 13 to 64 say they rarely or never get a good night's sleep. 60% of Americans say they have sleep problems nightly, and 50 to 70 million Americans are already known to have chronic sleep disorders. So making it one of the biggest health crises we have here in the U.S. outside of obesity. Since we've talked about all the problems, the known number one fix is exercise.
I do that.
The cool study about this one was actually done on firefighters in Germany. It's the only study ever done on mortality rates of firefighters that I could find. So everybody in our profession always talks about, like, you know, we have higher mortality rates. We die younger than, you know, the average population. That's not necessarily true. There's never really been a study on it, but it's anecdotally out there all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Like, I keep hearing, like, we're 5 times more likely to die of cancer.
So the only study done on life expectancy for firefighters, and they were looking at overall just health, from everything from cancer to what carcinogens they come into contact with. Sleep deprivation was part of it, but they were looking at strictly mortality. And what the Germans have is that once a year, each one of their firefighters has to take a physical where they have to produce 200 watts of power for 20 minutes. So whether that's on a bike or a row machine or whatever it is, it's actually pretty strenuous. And what they found was the firefighters who were able to do that actually had a decreased mortality rate, so they were able to live longer than the normal population. But the ones who weren't, so they weren't getting as much exercise, actually had these higher mortality rates, so they weren't able to live as long. And so the conclusion of this study was all of the sleep deprivation problems coming with their profession and the cancer problems and all of that were kind of mitigated by exercise. And So they were able to live longer just by being able to produce this. I like this
study. Yeah. That makes me feel in control again. The question I have is, can you make up then? Like, let's just say that you have a newborn baby and you're not going to get 8 hours of sleep. So the people that have that and they know that it's going to be that way for a while, but they can get an hour to 2 hour nap in every day. Can you make up for that block of time? For example, in our profession, maybe if I actually, just like I do exercise, allotted myself a hour, 2 hour nap after a bed shift, which I've never done, would that help?
Oh, it'll absolutely help, but the issue becomes in that circadian rhythm. You know, you want to try and make it, you know, the same amount every day.
Yeah.
So that your body can get used to that and get in its own rhythm. So your sleep, right, it comes in several different stages, REM and non-REM, and then, so you'll go through a cycle of sleep. Everybody has 3 to 4 cycles every night. You start off in stage one sleep, then stage two, stage three, then you've got your REM sleep, and then you start back over again. So if you can get even a cycle in, that's going to be better than not.
Right.
But at the same time, you don't want to be doing it inconsistently, because then you're going to throw off your circadian rhythm, which will then come with just as many issues.
Right.
But
and I understand, like, if you have a really terrible night, you can never make up those hours that you lost. Is that what you're saying? Is that you're never going to reverse the damage that's already been done?
Well, it depends on what you're talking about specifically, right? Because, like, we know that one night of interrupted sleep, you're going to increase the amount of ghrelin that's produced. You're going to increase the amount of cortisol. You're going to increase all of those stuff. So if you can reduce their effects on the back end by sleeping, that's going to be helpful. But you're never going to be able to take away the amount of cortisol that was released or ghrelin that was released or whatever.
Yeah.
But you can help it. So for instance, exercise, 30 minutes of exercise is known to get rid of huge amounts of cortisol. So if you're, you know, you get a lack of sleep, like at work or whatever, you've got that cortisol floating around in you, that stimulating thing, it makes it hard to take a nap. Go run for 30 minutes and now you've almost eliminated most of the bad effects of it. I think it's awesome. And one of the cool examples we have was a guy we all know that's retired now, but he had the weird quirk of after every call he went on after midnight, he'd go back and run 12 minutes on the treadmill or row for 12 minutes. And whether he was doing it to get rid of this cortisol and allow him to sleep better, who knows? But that was the perfect remedy for exactly what was happening.
Such a robot.
Yeah.
You do have you ever done an ultra marathon?
Mm-hmm.
You have.
Well, that's what anything longer than a marathon is, an ultra.
Okay. Have you done like 100 miles?
No, never.
Okay. I talked to one girl, and have they talked about their sleep at all or hallucinations during their run?
No, but I've heard of the people that sleep while they're running.
Yes,
I've
met a girl that said the same thing.
Read something about that too.
Yeah, I thought she was lying when she told me. She was like, yeah, I was sleeping when I'm running. I'm like, that's not possible.
No, it's true. I read like 30-second intervals or whatever is typically what it lasts. And they will run, their body will actually shut down. They won't have a memory of it.
Yeah, Dr. Walker said the same thing about some girl that was doing an ultra. She said that she hallucinates. Like, she will see rabbits talking to her. I'm like, what? I don't know. I want to run and see talking rabbits.
But you have to run 100 miles, so there's that.
That's true.
Well, I've been like that's where you're crazy. Going in like somewhere between like mile 20 and 25, and you just check out, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm at 25. Sweet, you know. Like,
I'm like that every time I drive to work. I'm like, oh, we're at the bridge.
But I don't think I'm sleeping at the time. I'm just my head somewhere else. But lots of those, like the Western states, if you watch some of their YouTube videos, those guys, they'll say all the time, oh, yeah, I got X number of sleep on that particular section.
Whoa.
It's weird.
I just want to hallucinate. I just want to see the shit.
I just want to sleep.
Just without drugs? You just have, what?
There's got to be some meditation or something.
Cute little bunnies. I want to know, is it like a Bambi bunny or is it a real
bunny? Probably not. It's like a scary bunny. It's probably like Bunnicula.
Straight out of Monty Python, the deathly bunny. Like,
oh, I'm sorry. I can't run. Every time I do, I have a bad trip.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you like what you saw or heard today, check us out on our podcast or YouTube.
Or visit our website, medicalconfessions.com.